This programming is sponsored by Linscombe Wealth, a wealth management firm partnering with individuals and families dedicated to helping them build, preserve, and manage wealth by creating a customized plan to work toward achieving their goals. More at linscombewealth.com.
Well, folks, we've got a new format with Party Politics, right, Brandon?
Same Party Politics that you love. We're just going to tweak it a little bit, Jay.
That's right. It's going to be a little Texas, a little national, kind of Texas fried national politics.
I like that, Texas fried.
Yeah. Some days it'll be our big topic of the week will be national. Sometimes it'll be a Texas topic. But our goal is to try to blend all of this together to give you the best sort of news that you can go to your next party and talk politics.
That's right. All one-stop shopping from a couple of interested parties here deep in the heart of Texas. Hey, welcome to Party Politics. I'm Brandon Rottinghouse, a political science professor from the University of Houston.
And I'm Jay Iyer, a political science professor from Texas Southern University. Thanks for joining us at our favorite hangout. This is our one-year anniversary, Brandon.
Happy anniversary,
Happy
Jay.
Happy anniversary. It's opening day of baseball season.
Wow.
The world champion Houston Astros trying to defend their crown.
That's right. Let's go for two, right?
Exactly, exactly. Well, we've got a lot going on this week. We've got a bunch of stuff nationally, a bunch of stuff here in Texas. But let's start with kind of the big kind of the new trade war that seems to be emerging. What's going on with the U.S. and China?
Yeah, speaking of turf defense, right? The president has announced that he's going to direct the U.S. trade representative to level tariffs against China to the tune of about $50 billion. This comes after a seven-month investigation into intellectual property theft from China. The aim here is to try to force China to change its ways in terms of technology transfer and also to try to get them to basically stop stealing some of U.S. proprietary technology. So is it going to work? What's going on?
Yeah, you know, I think the big problem right now is much like other related actions in foreign policy that the president's decided to take, it's unilateral.
Yeah.
So you've got no support from your allies. You've got, in fact, you've got pushback from the European Union, from the UK, and from other allies that are essentially saying, why are you doing this? We're kind of going alone. It opens up China to retaliate in some ways. And this is going to get dealt with at the World Trade Organization, and we'll see what happens. But I think the big thing here, Brandon, is it spooked the markets. We had massive dips in the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones collapsed for about a week. Now it's since recovered because there's an agreement at least for a conversation to start having some negotiations between the U.S. And China.
And also, China's not going to just sit by and let this happen. I mean, they've announced that they're going to produce a list of goods that are going to retaliate against this particular increase. The president has said he thinks that these trade wars are easy to win. There's something to that. I mean, deficit countries hold an advantage over those with a surplus, and our surplus with China is something like $500 billion. Something like 3% of China's GDP is produced from U.S. demand. So it is possibly the case that they could affect this at the margins. But the fact that there's still such a demand for U.S. goods and the fact that we're spending so much in deficits, right? I mean, like if a huge tax bill, right? And there's a huge spending from the budget, which we've talked about. It's impossible to see that this is going to really be effective. And like you say, the Republicans are nervous about the economy, right? They've got to go ask for re-election in a couple of months. And if things aren't going well, it's going to be a problem.
Exactly. Well, speaking of asking for re-election and speaking of wars going on, the president's got a two-front war going on. Obviously, he's got issues with Congress and in terms of foreign policy, but he's got this massive political war and he's got a real problem right now. What's going on with Stormy Daniels?
Yeah, so Miss Daniels had given an interview with 60 Minutes where she talked more in depth about her relationship with the president. This corroborated a lot of the reporting that's been done. So there wasn't a lot of new stuff here, but I think what it did is to put it back on the front page. And like the Grand Canyon, this is a slow erosion of support for the president. The polling suggested, though, that although people believe her and think that he did what she said he did, they don't think he's honest. That didn't seem to affect his approval ratings that much.
Yeah.
I think it's probably at this nadir, right, for that.
Yeah, I think the issue to me is that there's probably not a single Trump supporter who actually questioned whether President Trump had an affair with Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, they know it. And
they know it.
More
and
or less
they,
okay with
exactly.
It.
And they voted for him. So there was a full disclosure, so to speak, on that. I think the issue for the president is the cover up. And we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is as to whether or not his attorney made payment to Stormy Daniels, essentially to get her to stop doing this. That has real ramifications. because it potentially could have violated campaign election laws, and it comes directly under the special prosecutor. And so that, to me, is the big political question. I don't think he's going to have a problem politically in terms of polling-wise weathering the storm, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think it's really going to have add a little bit of fuel to the fire when it comes to the special counsel.
The president's also looking for attorneys, and he can't find one, right? And so this kind of churn continues in terms of the internal workings of the White House. Actually, the VA secretary is basically fired via Twitter, right? The president announced that the VA secretary, David Shudkin, was going to be replaced by the White House physician, Dr. Ronnie Jackson, who has a Texas connection, right?
That's right. He was a physician at UTMB, and he famously, when the president had his last physical, said he was, you know, he has great genetics, and okay. He could live to 200 if he'd exercise.
I want that from
more.
My doctor, right?
Yeah, I know.
He's going to live to be 200 years old. And
exactly. Well, but he gave the president a clean bill of health.
Yeah.
He meets with the president regularly, has a personal relationship with him, which we know from past conversations around the idea of who should fill cabinet positions makes a big part of this.
Yeah. Well, there's other news internationally, Jay. The president has ordered the expulsion of about 60 Russian officials this week. What's going on with that?
Sure. Well, a couple weeks ago, we had talked about the assassination of two Russian nationals in the United Kingdom that was investigated.
They were poisoned, right?
Exactly. They were poisoned. And it was discovered that it was clearly an operation conducted by the Russian government. There was outrage globally and official outrage from the United States, but I think a little bit of silence from President Trump, who famously congratulated President Putin on his...
After being told not to, right?
After being told not to, his resounding re-election that was generally viewed as a bad election, so to speak. So NATO acted, and the United States is signatory to NATO, North American Treaty Organization, which has a doctrine that says an attack on one is an attack on all. And so there was a collective decision that was made to expel about 60 Russian diplomats and close a consular office in Seattle. All of that was done. It was official. The U.S. has sort of in lockstep with NATO. But it still, I don't think, diminishes the dear affection that the president seems to have for President Putin.
Yeah, and on that point, I mean, the president has to walk a fine line between punishing Russia, but also kind of not walking back some of the prior support that he has. So in a way, his hand was sort of forced here. Would he have done it if the rest of the NATO hadn't essentially sanctioned it? I kind of doubt it, right? He's in that position where he's not willing to go that far. So this is still a dicey territory for the president.
Well, Brandon, here in Texas, and nationally, the big story in terms of natural disasters, just 6-7 months ago was Hurricane Harvey. Well, there's this interesting proposal that's come out to maybe do one fell swoop to try to solve, not just manage flooding, but to essentially mitigate and eliminate flooding altogether, potentially at least for 500 or 100-year floodplain people who live in those areas. They're talking about building a big underground
right.
sort of tunnel, like water tunnel. What's
right.
going on?
So there was a discussion, yeah, about essentially drilling these tunnels under the city of Houston and have the water funnel out to places where it was safer to allow it to flow. This actually was brought up over the summer, too, after Harvey, because the idea was basically to like collect the water and send it to places that needed water, like far west Texas. So the only difference now is that Elon Musk apparently is interested. So this is an interesting wrinkle in Houston history.
So the Harris County Commissioner's Court has actually commissioned a study on this.
Yeah.
And when someone had tweeted it out, hey, Elon Musk, why don't you get involved? And he responds with the two-letter response of okay. And that's created this sort of frenzy of, you know, he's got a company called The Boring Company.
Yeah.
That has been building it for these hyperloops that he's been trying to do. And so the idea was, hey, let's get Musk to make this a major project. Now, as fanciful and crazy as this idea may sound, we've actually done this in Texas already. About 35 years ago in San Antonio, then Mayor Henry Cisneros came up with the idea the San Antonio River would perennially flood at any level of rainfall, of building essentially an underground river that would then take the that would allow you to manage the amount of water that came into the city. It worked. They basically built it, and it created the San Antonio Riverwalk, solved flooding, and created the second or third biggest tourist attraction in the state.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a big deal. So maybe this could work.
You can get yard-long margaritas there. So I'm all in favor of it if it's going to bring Houston into the walking, drinking city that it ought to be, right?
Exactly.
Well, speaking of collecting information, we have some interesting dimensions and dynamics with respect to the next census, Jay. What's going on?
Yeah, so the federal government, the Trump administration, through the Secretary of Commerce, has come up with the idea of putting or reintroducing a question on the census long form that asks for citizenship status.
Now, and this would be the kind of thing somebody in person would have to answer when when they speak to a census agent.
Exactly. And for our audience members out there, everyone needs to know that the Constitution says every 10 years we are required to have a census, and that census has to be done in person. So essentially, you have to ask people kind of on a door-to-door basis. These questions, I think, are meant for biographical information, but it's important because it's a way to not just get redistricting for voting lines, because it's based on population, but also things like healthcare funding for food supplements, funding for federal funds as a whole, housing,
transportation.
Mm-hmm. So there's just a whole litany of it. The concern is when you ask for citizenship, you're going to create a chilling effect for people who are not here legally, that it's going to be used against them to potentially deport them.
Yeah, in a state like Texas that has a high number of poor people and Hispanics and young people, it increases the chance of an undercount. And I think a lot of the representatives in Texas are worried that it's going to cause harm to certain areas in terms of what representation might look like. But it also is potentially financially difficult, like you said, because Texas could be on the hook for losing upwards of $40 billion in funding for food to address hunger, highways and construction issues through the Department of Transportation. And just as a kind of slightly more personal note, like doing polling work requires you to pull data from the community census. And that's something that, if that's incorrect, could bias your polling report. So it makes it more difficult to be able to identify generally where populations are.
So, Brandon, why is this recommendation being made? Why are they asking for it?
Well, I think part of it, people look at this as being political, right? They want to be able to try to identify where there are these undocumented populations and try to seek them out to expunge them from the country. And so why exactly they would bring this back at this moment, I think, is unclear. But it does have a ramification politically in terms of what the Trump administration might do. But it could have dire implications for some of the most needy and some of the most vulnerable in Texas.
Yeah, we haven't had this question asked since 1950 on the census. So this is something that's really come back from a very, very long ways ago. Well, speaking of controversy, good old Congressman Steve Stockman, who has for years, before we had Sid Miller, before we had Ken Paxton, was our fun poster boy for all sorts of shenanigans. Wow. And it turns out that he is still the gift that keeps giving.
He needs a talk show. The litany of things that have come out in this trial is just outstanding. So the background is that this former lawmaker who is in the U.S. Congress from Clear Lake was on trial for 28 criminal counts related to siphoning off donation funds to cover his own personal and political debts. Lawyers have called this a white-collar crime spree, and the number of things that have come out have been outstanding. He has apparently used this money to cover a 30-day treatment for a friend's chemical dependency, to fund a book project, to perform surveillance on one of his potential political rivals. Jay, he is like the Texas Nixon.
Exactly. And that's the other one, too, on the surveillance one. To me, that is the thing that I think is getting everyone going, what's going on? He hired a private investigator, used an organization to essentially plant an individual in State Representative James White's office to take photographs and gather incriminating information.
Try to catch him swearing and stuff like
that.
Right? Changing in his car.
Changing in his car. If he had a messy desk, all sorts of weird little things that Stockman thought would be problematic in a potential primary challenge.
Well, Jay, it's about time for a break. Why don't we take one quick, and then we'll come back and talk about our deep issue of the week, and that's the March for Our Lives and the discussion around protest and gun control.
So on March 24th, we saw, I think, a pretty amazing display of civic pride and activism from young people, something we haven't seen in a very, very long time, Brandon. The March for Our Lives, it was a national march in favor of limitations on guns. It was all across the country, headed in Washington, D.C., but we saw it in every part of the country. We saw it in Texas, California, every major city had them. What were they asking for? How do we see this? Do you see it as part of a larger political movement? What do you think?
Yeah, there was tremendous crowds. They were on par with the Women's March from last year and some of the biggest since the Vietnam War era protests. Like you said, about 800 different cities across America, maybe 500,000 people in total. I think this amounts to a pretty significant kind of political force that is definitely to be considered and to be dealt with. I am not so convinced, however, that this is going to change too much in terms of the politics of this, and I want to get your take on this. I think at the very top of this, my sense is that although it certainly is the case that this activism can lead to policy change, it requires that the members of Congress sort of see this and really, frankly, become afraid of it, right? That they understand that this is going to be translating into votes down the road. That historically has not been true. Younger people typically don't vote in as big a numbers. The turnout rates in 2016 for 18 to 29-year-olds was about 46%. For people 45 to 64, it was 65%. So that's about a 20-point difference. If you're a politician, you're not that worried, I think, about young people voting. But, of course, they weren't just young people who were protesting. So the question for members of Congress is, are they that worried about this being one big issue in terms of gun control? And is that enough to be able to push people to make changes?
Yeah, and I think the other issue to me is that the question of whether or not gun control will energize voters on the left to make it a definitive issue in terms of voting. So what we've seen in the past has been that most of the energy on the Second Amendment and gun control as a whole has been on the right. And there has been just fierce opposition to any moves or any changes to gun access. And so we saw this back in 1994, 1993, during the assault weapons ban, the Brady Bill, pass really with the strength of essentially one or two votes during President Clinton's first term. Many believe that that vote led to several members of Congress losing their seats in 94. And was widely one of the reasons why we had such difficulty getting any sort of substantive legislation. As sort of a side note, that decade of time, we saw a reduction in mass shootings because of the, and some are saying because of the assault weapons ban, and it's since ticked up since we've had the weapons ban expire. But to me, I think the big question is, are we seeing a transformation on the left where this becomes the definitive issue to rally people around? For example, someone going to get voted out of office for taking a position that's similar to the NRA?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And the NRA has really been demonized through a lot of this. And I'm not sure that enough of these members of Congress are that worried. I mean, for sure, we're going to see a lot of losses from Republicans, right? I mean, just national trends in terms of the economy and in terms of lack of support for Donald Trump is definitely going to cause some of these members to lose their seats. This, I think, will be part of that. But it's unclear whether this one thing is going to be the factor, right? I mean, we definitely have a lot of energy from Democrats more broadly. The other marches, including the Women's March, like I mentioned, was definitely part of that too. So I do think you're going to find this. But protesters, in terms of what we know from political science literature, tend to be more white and they tend to be economic liberals than people who either vote or contact elected officials. So we are talking probably about the same type of person, the same type of individual who has beliefs to be able to go out and march against some of the more conservative policies that have been pretty well entrenched. So gun rights supporting politicians may see these protests as just a kind of manifestation of the same groups who have been trying to oust them and maybe don't take action as a result. Now, it could be to their peril if it's the case that they're wrong, right? That, in fact, there is a groundswell of support against that. And so I guess we're going to have to wait and see the degree to which this has effects in individual locations.
Well, here in Texas, Ted Cruz, Senator Cruz, has been essentially using it as a means to kind of campaign against his challenger, Beto O'Rourke, essentially saying he's out of step on gun rights issues. He's proudly talking about his support from the NRA. I think the same is true of Governor Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton. On the Democratic side, you see more of a shift on that, particularly among the big city mayors, whether in Austin and Dallas. But here in the city of Houston, Mayor Sylvester Turner he attended the march and went as far as saying he wanted to have a commission on gun violence and gun-related issues. Brandon, do you see anything with state and local officials that's going to maybe move the dial in a way differently than a larger national discussion?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we've definitely seen here in Texas, like efforts from local areas to try to push a more progressive agenda. And the state has basically snapped them back into place. And so I don't know how far that will go. But I do think there's a political upside for Republicans, especially like Ted Cruz, to say that this is essentially a red versus blue issue. This is a, you know, liberty versus a non-liberty issue. So he can get a lot of traction by supporting this. Now, there are definitely going to be people on the left who are riled up by this, like you say. So the same groups of individuals who support O'Rourke and that kind of progressive agenda are going to support him no matter what Cruz does. So I don't know. Again, this is the one issue, but it definitely could be helpful for Ted Cruz. It could be helpful for O'Rourke, and that means a bigger turnout. And that means, I think, generally that, you know, there's a more competitive election.
So I'm interested to see what happens here locally and what happens sort of statewide, what we think might happen in Austin and in the legislature in 2019 when they meet. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's try to answer that question. What we think substantively might come out of these calls for a commission or any legislative action, both here in Texas and maybe even nationally. So, Brandon, what do you think is going to happen here? We've got calls for commissions. We've got Senator Cruz pushing back. We've got Democratic mayors saying we need some action now. What's going to happen here in Texas?
I suspect the next legislative session here is going to probably bring up some of the old tropes on terms of gun issues. So, for instance, we'll probably have efforts to push for constitutional carry, right, which is basically the lifting of any sanction or any kind of regulation on holding and possessing a firearm in Texas. That's probably going to be on the list. Now, the question is how high on the list, right? Will Dan Patrick and will Greg Abbott identify this as being a major issue? I don't think so. I think they can win on other issues, especially economic issues. So, again, I don't see this being that big of an effort, in part because these things require sustained efforts on behalf of the organizers. And I don't know that this is going to be what they're caring about in 6 months and even potentially a year. So we'll see how much lasting power this has. If it does, it could be impactful. But if not, then it just fades away or is indexed into other types of issues.
I think locally you might see some changes. You might see this commission come up with some specific recommendations, potentially not able to purchase guns and or ammunition at gun shows, at city-owned facilities. I think that's a possible recommendation. And also looking at other ways to reduce violence as a whole. I think it's, like all things, I think it's going to be locally driven here in Texas. It's not going to be driven statewide. But this is Texas, and so local control is in jeopardy every day as we speak. So it's only a matter of time before I'm sure that gets preempted. Well, that's it for this week. Party Politics is recorded in the George B. Geary Performance Studio at Houston Public Media.
Any questions? Shoot us a tweet with the hashtag PartyPoliticsPod or email us at PartyPoliticsPod@HoustonPublicMedia.org. Thanks to our super producer, Edel Halland, who would always march in our favor, and to our engineer, Todd, the big crowd, Hulslander.
I'm Jay Iyer.
And I'm Brandon Roddinghouse. We'll see you next week.